So we read from the Maintaining Like the Rays of the Sun. With regard to the training of the mind in the ultimate bodhicitta, it's explained under three titles. The first title is explaining the object to whom you should give such an ultimate bodhicitta. That means the object to whom you should explain the meaning of subtle emptiness. Meaning that this should not, such a teaching cannot be given to someone whose mind is not trained. So whether it's due to lack of improper intelligence or due to lack of accumulation of merit, if one develops disliking towards the view of emptiness, or one may misapprehend the meaning of emptiness, thus there will be such shortcomings if one is not an improper disciple. And someone told me, someone even made a remark to me saying that the teaching of the Buddha is very good and excellent, but the problem is that in the end of everything they will say that everything is empty. So this clearly shows that such remarks are made due to lack of proper understanding of meaning of emptiness. And then even during casual discussion, sometimes we say, don't worry, everything is emptiness. So this clearly shows you have not understood the meaning of emptiness. And by using the reason of emptiness, if you say that you do whatever you like, then that is the nihilistic point view. And therefore, for such people, even if you have some interest in the meaning of emptiness, but because of wrong understanding, it will harm oneself. So it is important to training the mind based on the understanding that all problem arises from the grasping of the person, and therefore the way to remove such self-grasping is by understanding the meaning of emptiness properly and correctly. And therefore it is important to be able to understand emptiness correctly, in the sense of being able to understand that everything is interconnected, interdependent, and it is because of this nothing, there is nothing that has independent existence. And therefore, by a proper understanding of emptiness, one will be able to instill special understanding of the relation between the cause and the effect, the karma and the effect. And therefore, even though emptiness is very important, but in terms of the practitioner, there will be many practitioners, and for some emptiness will be appropriate, and for some the teaching of emptiness will not be appropriate. And therefore Buddha gives different levels of meaning of emptiness. And that is why there are occasions when Buddha gives teachings like saying that the five psychophysical aggregates are the loads, and the person is the one who carries that load. And therefore in terms of the person to whom such teaching should be given, it should be given to someone who is suitable disciple, suitable follower. And otherwise many faults and shortcomings will arise. And therefore in the root infractions of the bodhisattva, one infraction is giving teaching or giving teaching on emptiness to those whose mind is not trained. Now, if you ask the question, how could we understand the person who is suitable or not? The suitable ability is dependent on whether there is appreciation towards the teaching of emptiness or not, and also it is dependent much on one's own intelligence. Just as the presence of fire is understood through the presence of the smoke, and just as the presence of water is understood through the presence of the water bird, and therefore the intelligent bodhisattva should be understood from their signs and lineages. So by observing the external physical and verbal signs and behaviors, you can fathom whether that person is a suitable disciple of emptiness or not. And if you ask what are the indications, the indications are that when you hear the teaching on emptiness for the first time, if people are expressing appreciation and enthusiasm, and because of such appreciation, even the hairs of the body raises up, and tears fall from their eyes. So these are unmistakable signs that one is a suitable disciple, as is explained in the Madhyamika Avatara. And even at the time when one is an ordinary person, by hearing the meaning of emptiness, there will be constant internal joy, and because of constant joy, one's eye will be moistened with tears, and the hairs of the body will stand up, and such a person has the seat of the seat of the mind of the Buddha, and such a person is the suitable disciple. If you give the teaching to those who are not a suitable vessel or suitable disciple, then because of lack of interest, they will get frightened and give up emptiness. And if they give up emptiness, and then one is really abandoning the heart essence of the teaching of the Buddha, and because of such action of abandoning the Dharma, one will wander aimlessly in negative state of existence. And in the case of some, even though there is superficial interest, then because of wrongly misperceiving the meaning of emptiness, they will understand emptiness equal to nothingness, and they will therefore intentionally ignore the cause-effect relationship. On the other hand, if emptiness is taught to a fully qualified student, then one will be able to properly understand the meaning of dependent origination, and one will then hear, think and meditate on emptiness, and observe the moral discipline clearly, and one will follow a path that leads to liberation, as is said in the Madhyamika Avatara. And then the second point explains about the time when the training of ultimate bodhicitta should be taught. The root text says, having gained stability, then the secret should be taught. In the case of one having the Mahayana lineage, first one should show the view of emptiness and then enter into the practice of the method. However, in this system, first one should reflect on the four practices as preliminary practices. Then as the actual practice, one should habituate oneself with the bodhicitta, aspiring the purposes of other sentient beings and aspiring enlightenment, and then get habituated with the practice of the method. And after that, one should give the secret teaching on the ultimate truth. And while meditating on the ultimate bodhicitta, the root text says that all phenomena should be contemplated as a dream, and you should analyze the nature of awareness which is unproduced, and thus the antidote will also get liberated in its own place. And as the entity of the path, let your mind abide on the foundational consciousness, or the let your mind remain on the one that is basis of all. So the first word, first line, reflect all phenomena as a dream, explains the meaning of selflessness of phenomena. For example, in the dream, even if you get dream of horses, elephants and so on, these are appearance only at the level of consciousness of the dream. And then the next line, analyze the nature of awareness which is unproduced. This establishes how all internal minds and consciousnesses, they are also without self, without inherent existence. So this is in a way refuting the view of the mind-only school of thought, who propound that mind, the minds, the subjective minds have inherent existence or true existence. And then the third line, which reads that the antidote will also get liberated in its own place, means that the person who is analyzing this, analyzing such nature of mind, also doesn't have true existence. So these are the process of undertaking analytical meditation. And then the first, then the last line, which says, in terms of the entity of the path, remain in the one that is basis of all. That means, and having analyzed and investigated, when you do not find anything, then on that very finding, on that very meaning, without letting your mind obstructed by thinking and excitement, dullness or excitement, you should undertake the one-pointed meditation. You should undertake the one-pointed meditation. So here, basis of all, here when we talk about basis of all, it's not talking about the foundational consciousness which has been explained by the mind-only school of thought. And this also probably does not refer to emptiness, as has been explained by Chandrakirti. So this refers to just meditating mind. And then the text explains about the process of sustaining practice during the post-meditative session. And during the post-meditative session, things should be known, like a person in the person of illusion. So such teachings are transmitted from successive masters, from Atisha and Domtomba, Sharava, Chekava and so on. So this is the unmistaken teaching of Chekava, without addition and without deletion. So the lineage that comes from Potova really believes the viewpoint of the Madhyamika, as is explained by Nagarjuna, Chandrakirti and so on, the meaning of the subtle emptiness. It is also possible to interpret these lines in accordance with the philosophical viewpoint of the mind-only school of thought, in accordance with the Sarvatantrika Madhyamika school of thought, in terms of the Prasangika Madhyamika system. So whatever be the case, during the subsequent stage of meditation, you should see everything like a person that is seen in an illusion, that even though things appear but devoid of inherent existence, and therefore whether it's a practice that must be adopted, and or it is a negative experience that must be eliminated, they should all be seen like an illusion without having inherent existence. And therefore, by realizing the selflessness and influenced by the wisdom understanding selflessness, you should train in the practices of cultivation of method. And so one should first of all develop a strong aspiration to achieve enlightenment, and then meditate on emptiness, and also meditate on emptiness, and then develop a strong wish to achieve enlightenment. It is in this way that practice of method influences the practice of wisdom, and the development of wisdom influences the view of, influences the practice of the method. Nagarjuna has been prophesied by Buddha himself, who will saying that he will make an unmistaken explanation of the meaning of what is interpretative and what is ultimate. And with regard to meaning of what is interpretative and what is ultimate, again there are differences among different philosophical school of thought. But according to the Prasangika Madhyamika school of thought, definitive teachings are those that conveys the meaning of emptiness or ultimate truth, and those scriptures that explain the meaning of conventional truth are called interpretative teachings. So by following Nagarjuna and his students, and as has been taught by Chandrakirti, in other words, the meaning of selflessness has been explained by Chandrakirti, by following Nagarjuna and his disciples. And one of the main disciples of main and senior disciple of Nagarjuna was Buddhapalita, and he gave a correct interpretation of emptiness. And following their footsteps, Chandrakirti had composed Madhyamika Avatara, and also an auto commentary, and with elaborate explanation, presenting and asserting one's own viewpoint and refuting others' viewpoint, the meaning of selflessness has been explained. The explanation by Buddhapalita was a short and more related to personal experiences. And then in the case of the commentary by Bhava Viveka, it is much more elaborate, raising doubts and questions to some of the viewpoints expressed by Buddhapalita. And then Chandrakirti, in his text called Clear Word, clearly agreed to the viewpoints of Buddhapalita and refuted the viewpoints of Bhava Viveka, and made a clear and decisive presentation, and composed an excellent text. And such a presentation of selflessness made by Chandrakirti is accepted as the unmistaken thought of the Buddha by the great master Jovaji Atisha, and therefore he says, how could you realize emptiness? You could realize emptiness by following the teachings of Chandrakirti, who is a student of Nagarjuna, who was prophesied by Buddha. And by following the lineage, instruction of that lineage, one will actualize the truth, the suchness. Now realization, the next second point explains about how to recognize or identify ignorance, and showing that as the root of samsara. And when we talk about ignorance is not ignorance is what is contradictory to knowledge, and therefore ignorance is not just other than knowledge. So therefore you should understand these different levels of connotation and understanding and do not get confused. And otherwise there is this story of one person who saw a wooden stair and asked him what this stair is made of, and then someone said this is a teak wood, and then later on whenever he saw any piece of wood he said this is teak wood. So he categorized all woods as teak wood. And therefore it is important to understand the meaning in the context of a particular line or particular teaching. And for example, the word ultimate, it has so many different connotations. In the level of the Buddha we talk about ultimate refuge or conventional refuge or ultimate truth, and ultimate in the sense of an object of negation, ultimate in the sense of emptiness, ultimate in the sense of wisdom, understanding that emptiness. So ignorance is here is not just something that is other than knowledge, or it is also not just the knowledge also is not just refutation. Ignorance is not just the absence of knowledge, but it is something that is contradictory to the knowledge and opposite to it. And therefore here when we talk about knowledge, we are not talking about all types of knowledge, but wisdom that has the knowledge of selflessness. Therefore ignorance is a mind that exaggerates the reality, and therefore ignorance here is of two types: grasping of the person and grasping of the phenomena. And focusing on the person and the phenomena, such an ignorance exaggerates the person and the phenomena, and thus produces the two graspings. And therefore in terms of selflessness also there are two levels of selflessness, that's of the person and of the phenomena. And in terms of establishing the view of selflessness, it is important the refutation or negation of the object should not be more than necessary, or so there should not be over application or less application in terms of establishing the selflessness. So there should be a correct identification, and if you over apply the object of negation, then you will mix existence and true existence, and therefore in the name of refuting true existence you will refute everything, and you will then not be able to present the existence of anything, and would end up saying that afflictive emotions and pure practices, these are all presented on the level of mistaken mind, and then one will not be able to posit what has been affirmed and perceived by a valid cognition, by a valid mind, by a valid perception. And uh, And if you are unable to understand this in its proper context, then you will make a mistake in relation to the foundation, in relation to the path, in relation to the fruit. in the basis, in the case of the foundation and basis, we should be able to present our basis, which is free from all types of extremes of permanence and nihilism. And when it comes to actual practice, by meditating on the meaning, it should be done by a combined practice of method and wisdom. And as a result, during the resultant state, you actualize the two bodies, the form body and the truth body. And in this way, within the mind of one body, we're able to actualize such qualities as of same entity, but of different individual aspect. And having actualized such a state, one is able to abide continuously until to the end of the samsara, and effortlessly and spontaneously fulfill the needs and purposes of sentient beings. So such a presentation will not be possible if you make a mistake of over-application of the object of negation. So it is by developing a correct understanding of the true truths that one will be able to develop bodhicitta in relation to the conventional truth. And by understanding the emptiness, one can meditate on emptiness, and these two practices will assist each other. And as a result of accumulation of the two accumulations of merit and wisdom, one actualizes the form body for oneself and the dharmakaya or truth body for others as of one entity. And so if you over apply the object of negation, then you will not be able to present the actual existence of an object or person, and you will not be able to make a clear distinction between a person in a dream and the actual person. And then the next is the fault of inadequate application of the object of negation. That means if there is too little negation of the object of negation, then again this is wrong. For example, when Buddha taught the four promulgations, then all the Buddhist schools of thought accept that this is definitive. But in terms of the meaning of selflessness of all phenomena, and particularly in terms of the self that is non-existent, then the sarvakas they do not make a presentation of the self of the phenomena and the selflessness of the phenomena, and therefore for them selflessness means selflessness of the person, and selflessness of the person also refers to the mere emptiness, mere absence of the substantially existent person. And according to the pioneers of the mindless school of thought, meaning of selflessness means lack of the substantial separateness of the subject and the object, even though they accept both the selflessness of the person and selflessness of the phenomena. The selflessness of the person is accepted similar to how it is accepted by the Vaibhashikas and Sautantikas. And with regard to the second meaning, the meaning of selflessness of the phenomena, it refers to the lack of substantial separateness of the subject and the object. And according to the Madhyamika school of thought, again there are two schools, the Svatantrika schools and the Prasangika Madhyamika school thoughts. And according to the Svatantrika Madhyamika schools, they also accept the two types of selflessnesses. And the meaning of selflessness of person is similar to the earlier philosophical schools of thought. And in terms of the selflessness of the phenomena, this is accepted as has been explained by Bhava Viveka in his Tarkajwala or Blazing Reasons, where they accept when they talk about selflessness of phenomena, they talk about non-existence of a self which exists from its own side, irrespective of how it appears to consciousness, to a valid consciousness. And according to some past Tibetan scholars, when they talk about selflessness, then they identify the self as something that could stand the analysis of wisdom consciousness that analyzes the ultimate truth, and therefore that which is able to stand the analysis of a wisdom mind that analyzes the ultimate truth and what has been perceived by it and what is an object of it, these are of same meaning. And according to them, if there is an object of the wisdom consciousness that analyzes the ultimate truth, then that should be able to stand the analysis of such a wisdom mind. And if such an object is there, then it should have true existence. And according to some scholars, they say that there is no object to the wisdom consciousness that analyzes the ultimate truth. And according to some, they say that ultimate truth has true existence and therefore it is able to stand the analysis of the wisdom mind. And according to some, they say ultimate truth is not an object of knowledge, and thus they deny the ultimate truth. And according to some, they say that from the point of view of the wisdom mind, there is no object. And from the point of view that it is an inferential cognition, there is an object. Therefore, they say that they are free from the two extremes of exaggeration and denial. And all those Buddhist schools of thought below the Sautantrika Madhyamika, their presentation of afflictive emotion is based on what has been explained by the Abhidharma and its commentaries. And according to their viewpoint, the ignorance, which is the root of the samsara, is imaginary. And what the ignorance which is imaginary and designated based on a philosophical viewpoint is found only in the mind of person whose mind is influenced by philosophical studies and is not found in the mind of other sentient beings. And therefore that cannot be accepted as the root cause of samsara, because the root cause of samsara should be something that is found both in the minds of those whose mind is not influenced by philosophical studies as well as those whose minds are influenced by philosophical studies. And according to one's own system, that is according to one Pansakika Madhyamika system, there are two types of ignorances, and that which is the root of samsara is the inborn ignorance. According to the preceding schools of thought, if things do not exist inherently from their own side, then it is not possible for them to present an object of knowledge and a mind that realizes that object of knowledge. And similarly, they will not be able to present the producer and what has been produced by the producer. But in accordance with the thought of Aryadeva and his followers, like Chandrakirti and so on, only on the level that things are merely designated, it is possible to access the present producer and what is being produced. And similarly, what has been obtained and the causes that are responsible for obtaining it, and that is an excellent way of making a correct explanation of the essential teaching of the Buddha. And as is said by Nagarjuna, that if you know the meaning of if you know this state of emptiness of all phenomena, and then rely on the cause effect relationship, then there is the most amazing of all amazing things, and the most marvelous of all the marvelous things. And therefore, whether it's the person or the psychophysical aggregates or any types of phenomena, without merely designated by the mind, if they are seen as having existence from their own side, then that is the measure of having true existence, as is exaggerated by inborn ignorance. And when such an object of negation is negated on the person, then that is selflessness of the person. And when this is refuted on the phenomena, then that is selflessness of phenomena, as is explained in the commentary of 400 verses by Aryadeva, where he clearly says that all phenomena are merely designated by the conceptual thought. Now, if we have two persons like Dashi or Tukin, and similarly a pot and the cloth, how these are designated? And similarly, when a magician creates elephants and horses from small stones, then how elephants and horses are designated on their tables and pieces of wood? And likewise, on a coil of rope, when darkness and falls, we tend to see that as a snake, and how a snake is designated on the coil of rope. So in all this, the process of designation is similar. So in the case of these two persons, if you analyze who these persons are, you will not find Tashi on his body or in his mind. Basis of designation, in the case of the basis of designation, there is not the slightest trace that would make it as a Tashi or as a Wangcho. Just as towards a coil of rope, because of the falling of darkness, being a snake on that coil of rope, but when you actually search it, you won't find any trace of snake on it. So therefore, they are same. But the difference is that to the on the basis of the psychophysical aggregate of Taishi, when Taishi is designated, then there is no contradiction to that. Whereas when we designate snake to a coil of rope, then this contradicts the worldly conventions and worldly perceptions. So in terms of whether they have objective existence or not, there is not the slightest difference. Now in the case of the presence of snake on the coil of rope, it is merely a designation from the mistaken internal mind, and apart from that, there is not the slightest trace of presence of either on the collection of the coil of rope or on the individual aspects of that coil of rope. Similarly, on the tables small pieces of wood. Similarly, when you see a reflection in a mirror, you should all be seen as of similar nature. So therefore, when we develop this perception of I and the self, there are three ways of developing that perception. For example, the first level of perception of the I is the one that we experience in the case of an experienced person. In the case of an experienced senior person, when without seeing it as a reflection in a mirror, when that person sees that object as having existence from its own side, that is called the inborn grasping of the person. And according to the process of this grasping, whether it's the person or any phenomena up to enlightenment, whether it's conditioned or unconditioned, one tends to exaggerate all these phenomena, and therefore that is the inborn self-grasping. And when you meditate on the selflessness of the person, to develop a proper understanding of it without intermixing the process of grasping in relation to the imaginary self, one should listen such teachings from a Mahayana teacher for a long time, and you should make a thorough search and analysis of such a process of grasping. And then the text explains about how such an inborn ignorance acts as the root cause of samsara cycle of existence. It is by seeing the self or the person and self and the mind, by seeing them as having inherent existence, one develops attachment to oneself, and one develops craving towards all types of happinesses of oneself. And even in the case of one's own happiness, without depending on mind, it doesn't have independent existence. And by developing craving towards what is mine, it obscures the faults and sees the qualities. And when you develop such grasping of my and mine, then these afflictive emotions accumulate action, and the actions also project us into the samsara.
Even if you want to come in.
Now, in order to eliminate that, it's important to establish the view of selflessness. In order to eliminate completely ignorance, it is important to establish how such a mode of apprehension of ignorance doesn't exist. And by meditating on the non-existence of such a mode of apprehension of ignorance, you should make your mind habituated with that and eliminate. So the elimination of such a grasping cannot be done by throwing some dharma or reciting some mantras and so on, but by analyzing whether such a thing as is grasped by ignorance is there or not. And the more you reflect on this, and the more you will be able to reduce the strength of such misconception of the reality. And that is the only way to remove such self-grasping, as is said by Dharma Kirti, and where he said that without eliminating its object, it is not possible to eliminate it. And without adopting such a practice, if you simply withdraw your mind going into the self, or without letting your mind engaging into the fact whether that existent or non-existence, or by meditating simply on non-conceptuality, it will not help. Now, for example, if you are confronted by many types of sufferings, then the way to remove suffering is not just to withdraw your mind from that, but you need to study the difficulties, study the problems, and then find out what are the causes and so on, and that is the way to eliminate it. And again here, when we use the mind, non-conceptuality, there are so many different types of non-conceptuality. And sometimes when we are very tired and we are half asleep, and particularly after dinner or lunch, when we are well fed, and then we sit erect and half asleep, then we look like then we are really like those rabbits who had enough water to drink and had eaten grass, and then they would raise their ears up and sit in a meditative posture. So likewise, we also at that time are maintaining some kind of non-conceptual thought. And then there is another non-conceptual thought which you intentionally generate by thinking that I will now not allow myself to enter into this field, that field, and so on. So there are so many different types of non-conceptual thoughts. And gradually, when you go out and having developed calm abiding, special insight, and so on, there is also a level where you can develop non-conceptual thoughts. And therefore, with reference to the mind conception also, there are too many different meanings. Particularly in relation to the tantric practice, depending upon the subtlety of the mind, distinction is made between conceptuality and non-conceptuality. And in some cases it may be a conceptual thought, but for example in the case of clear light, in terms of its nature, it is a conceptual thought. But since it is devoid of grosser levels of thought, it is called non-conceptual thought. So it is important to understand all these words, the meaning of all these words in their proper context. So therefore here when we talk about non-conceptuality, we are talking about not allowing your mind self to get distracted to whether things are existent, non-existent, this is or not this is, and so on. So that kind of non-conceptual meditation is also not meditation on selflessness. And then there is also a non-conceptual meditation having both a clear image of the object of negation, and then without chasing or following the analysis and investigation of the wisdom mind, and then without then other than what is being found, the wisdom mind. When you do not identify and recognize anything else and maintain a non-conceptual state of mind, then even in that case, however you make your mind habituated with this, it is not possible to eliminate the seed of the self-grasping. Because in the case of the first, where you have simply withdrawn your mind from entering into the self, even though your mind is not entered into the self, but there you have not developed a mind which is contrary to the mode of apprehension of the self-grasping. And then in the case of the second kind of non-conceptuality, this is really the practice of the Chinese abbot Hashang, who encouraged the practice of non-conceptuality and encouraged practitioners not to meditate on existence, non-existence, this and of this and so on. And in terms of this Hashang, there are many different types of Hashangs. At the time of about Shantarakshita, there were a group of Chinese meditation masters who were also Hashangs, and they had a special place. Who were great meditators, and they were not refuted by Chandrakshita and so on, so clearly showing that they were correct meditators. And according to the Chinese tradition, they talk about two types of meditators, two types of practitioners. One is called the meditators, another is called the Pure Land School and the meditation school. And later on, then when Kamala Shila refuted the Chinese about Hashang, then he was someone who didn't had a correct view. And it is also possible that he might have made a good understanding or good explanation, but his followers, many Tibetans, might have made wrong understanding. And whatever be the case, in accordance with this Hashang tradition, there was this teaching which said all kind of conceptual thoughts must be discouraged, and all kind of conceptual thoughts, whether they are positive or negative, since they are all grasping minds, therefore they must be discouraged. Then there are other teachings. For example, there are teachings which reads that if there is grasping, then it is not a view, as is said by, as is taught in such a tradition, where they encourage us to practice the parting from the four clingings. And then if you follow some of the enigma practices, then when they discourage grasping, then that is encouraged in the sense of your meditation on Rigpa, when you focus just on the clarity of the mind, then it should not be disturbed by the grasping. So again, there are many possible areas of mistake. And then in the case of the third meditation, the Vestu mind has established something, but at the time of meditation you are meditating on something else, therefore your meditation and practice will become unrelated. So it is really like showing the race course and then doing the actual horse running in some other direction. Or it is like allowing a thief run away into the forest and then finding his footsteps in the plain areas. Next point is the process of establishing the view of selflessness. And as explained earlier, in terms of the selflessness that has been explained in relation, in reference to the self that has been explained in relation to the person and the self, there is no subtlety. However, because of the basis of negation, there are differences in subtlety in terms of understanding. For example, in order to get the perception and reflection of the person, it is important first of all to get the idea of the body. And that is why in the Compendium of Wisdom Perfection, it also says that as you have understood the self, similarly you should understand the sentient beings. And as you have understood the sentient beings, similarly you should understand all phenomena. And therefore it is important first of all to gain some understanding about the meaning of the self that has been designated. In Shantidevas Bodhicharyavatara, as we'll read later on in the Wisdom Perfection, he says that unless you have a clear idea of the object of negation, it is non-existence, cannot be proved. And in the Shiksha Samuchya, Shantideva cites many quotations by first explaining all those phenomena which are directly related to us, and then he concludes by saying that all these are just designated. So this shows the importance of first of all gaining a clear understanding of the different types of phenomena, that they are existent, and once you are sure about these different levels of phenomena, and then you analyze their nature, and then you finally come to the conclusion that they are being designated, they are just designated, and that is also the meaning that has been explained by Chandrakirti in his Madhyamika Avatara by saying that the conventional truth is the method and the means, and the ultimate truth is the one that is derived from that method. And one who does not know such a distinction, then because of wrong conceptual thought, one will fall into the wrong path. And in the Nagarjuna's Fundamental Wisdom, he speaks about five aspects of analysis, or analyzing the person or the self. And in the Madhyamika Avatara, it explains about the sevenfold process of search and analysis. And through such process of search and analysis, you do not find the self. And this non-finding of the self itself is not the emptiness. And when you are unable to find it, then again you reflect based on your own experience how at a nominal conventional level you can experience the existence of these things and how they can harm and help you. However, when you search those things, in the object itself, you are unable to find it, you are unable to posit it from the sight of the object, and therefore we can conclude that the existence is just conventional and nominal. And once you have gained that kind of understanding, then you should also understand how things appear to you, to your ordinary mind, when these things appear to your uninformed mind, they appear to you as having inherent existence. So if you make such a comparative study, relate understanding, reflecting on the teaching and relating it to your own experience, then I think you will be able to gain some idea. So it is in this way you should think and contemplate. So first of all, it is important to gain some idea how things could exist inherently if there is one, or how could things exist independently if there is one, and what is the measure of independent existence or inherent existence. So when you analyze in this way, you will find there are so many processes of analyzing it. We now read from Shantideva's Bodhicharya Avatara. We have been reading that how the understanding of the higher schools of thought harms the understandings and presentations of the lower Buddhist schools of thought. Now, in order to refute the wrong notions of the lower schools of thought by the higher schools of thought, first of all, they should have a common ground of argument or common point where they accept, and once they are able to agree on certain common subjects of discussion, then they can also discuss and find out the possible areas of mistake. Now the next so verse we were reading, verse 4, that even in the case of yogis, depending upon their mental intelligence, the lower ones are harmed by the higher ones. And both in the case of the both, the ordinary and the yogis, the lack of true existence is explained by the example of an illusion, and therefore the Madhyamika viewpoint is argued by saying that in the case of both of us we talk about lack of we talk about non-true existence with the example of illusion, and as is explained by the example, if there is no true existence, then what is the use of practicing giving and so on for actualizing the resultant state of enlightenment? But from the Madhyamika viewpoint, they are presented without analysis. Verse number 5. Now, right from the cause-effect relationship to the achievement of enlightenment, if you ask if that is the case, then what is the point of disagreement and argument? This is explained in verse 5 by saying that even though things appear like that to all the schools of thought, but in the case of the ordinary worldly beings, they see all this as having independent or true existence. That's the meaning of worldly beings, seeing them as things, and they see them as having true existence. That means having true existence. And therefore they are unable to see them as like an illusion, and therefore there is this disagreement between the yogis and the worldly beings. So the argument is whether things have existence from their own side or not. And then the next verse, verse 6, is refuting the Vaibhishikas and the Sautantikas. And here if you say that you can't refute the true existence of the form and so on because they are objects of direct perception, this is answered by saying that the existence of form and so on are only on the level of perception of the worldly beings, and apart from that they do not have true existence. And this is similar to how we perceive the impure physical body. Even though in reality the physical body is impure, but this is known as pure to the worldly beings. So in this way, the Madhyamikas prove the point by saying that to see the form as is perceived by the direct perception as having true existence is wrong, because they are posited only from the parlance of the worldly viewpoints, and apart from what appears to us, there is no objective existence. And therefore, even though they appear to us as having true existence, but there is no such true existence, therefore they are false. For example, in the world, even the body is impure, but we think that this is pure, and therefore when we wash ourselves and take a bath, then we think we are clean. But in reality, we are impure, and so therefore this is there is this disparity between appearance and reality. So we stop here today.